The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon. Our guest today is Mr. Kevin Estrella. Kevin has always had a passion for UFOs, extraterrestrials spanning over 20 years, researching to understand why they are here. He wanted to combine his passion of music with raising consciousness and awareness of the UFO and extraterrestrial presence. He felt it was always his purpose in life. This calling was affirmed on August 21st, 2014, when he had contact with an interdimensional craft of unearthly origin. Since then, Kevin began having visitations by many different extraterrestrial nations and experiencing many other related incidents like incredible synchronicities, music downloads, symbol downloads through dreams, neck illusions, DNA double helix designed on his guitar, and increased telepathy. His musical downloads are discussed in UFO researcher Grant Cameron's book, Tuned In, The Paranormal World of Music. Many of Kevin's personal CE5 ET encounters are discussed in Inviting ET by Sue Walker. Kevin was on We Are Not Alone back in October of 2015, but much has happened with his ET involvement since then. So we're happy to have him back with us today to discuss these revelations. Welcome back, Kevin.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing? I can't believe it's been like 11 years since the last time I was on your show. Yeah, October of 2015 would have meant that was just a few months after the UFO conference in Brantford, after I met with Grant, and then everything came together, understanding about the UFO that I saw in 2014. But, you know, I was just an infant in regards to my UFO, what was happening with me with ETs and stuff at that point when I first talked to you. Yeah. I mean, the last 10 years have been, I could not imagine where my life has gone now. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. You mentioned Grant Cameron. Now, he typically deals with UFOs or ETs and presidents. How did you happen to stumble across him?
Well, it was, after my UFO encounter, which took place August 21st, 2014, when this craft flew across my backyard, and then I reported it to MUFON. And then it would be almost a year later when all this stuff would come together, where it was the first UFO conference in, I think, in Canada, actually. It was in Brantford in 2015, the summer. And the Hamilton Spectator newspaper here took out like a 3 or 4 page article talking about it because it was a huge deal. And then they had a list of all the guest speakers, and Stanton Freeman was there attending. Paul Hillier, the former defense minister of Canada. And then they said, and then when I read what Grant's presentation was and who he was, that's when my jaw hit the floor. Because at that point, I had already released my first album, Pyramids on Mars, which I was using, you know, my music as a catalyst to raise awareness of the consciousness of the ET presence. And then Grant Cameron's presentation was literally on extraterrestrials and musicians and how musicians are being contacted by ETs to raise the consciousness of the ET presence. And so Grant had started to, had just begun the study of this phenomenon through his conversations with experiencer Chris Bledsoe, because Chris Bledsoe is the one who said the answer is in the music. And that's when Grant started to study this connection between musicians, music, and the, you know, in the ETs. So that's kind of where that kind of came together.
So, how long have you guys, the pyramids on Mars, how long have you guys been recording and entertaining?
I believe, I'm trying to think here, Pyramids of Mars was created around 2011, and it's really, it's my solo project. So it's all the music is written by me. So, you know, I play all the guitars, I play the bass, all the keyboards, and I do all the drum programming. So nothing there's, you know, it's all written. I don't take, you know, samples of other people's work or samples of drummers. Everything is in my own head. And absolutely zero AI is ever used in my music. So you have to
So
say that now these days. Oh, jeez.
it's just a one-man band, you're saying?
That's right. Yep.
I thought there I saw your videos and it looked like you had another guitarist there. Was that you too?
I have a bass player.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, John Hudson's my bass player for when we play live. So yeah. So we do rehearse. We have four shows coming up actually. In Hamilton and in the Toronto areas. So we're excited about that.
So you're in Canada right now, right?
Yes, I'm in Hamilton, Ontario.
Very good.
Yeah.
So you had a sighting of an extraterrestrial craft in 2014. Tell us about that experience. How did it lead you to meeting with Grant Cameron?
Well, basically, it was August 21st, 2014, and I had just gotten my kids to bed. It was only 10:30 at night, and I lived in a big major subdivision on the Hamilton Mountain. So it was a big subdivision, you know, nice backyard. And I stepped out on my backyard at night. It was a clear sky, no clouds at all. And within 5 to 7 seconds of me stepping onto my deck, there appeared behind the tree to my neighbor's right side this object. And it was like, okay, you can picture like the trees in their backyard, but then there's an object that was 100 yards away that was right behind the tree, you know, within, you know, direct line of me. And then it came out from behind this tree. And at first, I thought it was a meteor that was coming into the atmosphere, because it was like a disc, but it was orangish red, glowing like coals, and had this like mist or steam that seemed to be coming off the back of it. And I didn't know what I was looking at, but then I realized like it was moving only at the speed of a helicopter, and I thought it was like coming into the atmosphere. But then I realized, no, this thing is actually flying over the subdivision. It was like, it's actually only like maybe 100 feet off the ground. And it was about maybe 40 feet wide and maybe, you know, 20 feet or 15 feet high. And I didn't know what I was looking at. And it just slowly moved across the distance of my backyard, this object. But the other crazy thing about it was that it was two dimensional. And that was throwing me off, because normally you see objects and they have, you know, three dimensions, height, width, and depth. This had height and width, but it had no depth. It looked like a piece of paper. It looked flat. It didn't make any sense to me. And I was looking at this thing, going, what the heck is that? And then it moved across my distance in my backyard, and then it turned away from me, going the opposite way towards Binbrook. And then when it turned away, that light stream that I saw, the orangish red, disappeared, and the object itself was nothing but, it was black, it had no light, and it was shaped like a football from behind, and then had this kind of swirling vortex kind of looking at the, you know, from the front of it. So, and then when it disappeared, That's when I realized, I think I just saw a UFO. I think I just saw a flying saucer. And then I was just completely flipped. I was freaked out because I had always wanted to have a UFO encounter, but I did not expect something this close showing displaying physics that I had never seen before. And my head was trying to wrap it my around it for 2 weeks, trying to make sense of this. And you can't. When you see something that defies physics of what you normally seen, it really is, it takes you for a mind trip. So,
Does
yeah.
been there. And then once again, you met Brent Cameron and told him of your experiences.
Yeah. So I met, I, you know, after I saw, in the paper, what his presentation was on, that was the first synchronicity of my life. And I realized there was something special that was going on because I had already released my first CD, Pyramids of Mars. And I was using that name, Pyramids of Mars, because I knew that there were pyramids of Mars from studying Richard Hoagland's, stuff on anomalies of, Cydonia and the anomalies on the moon and stuff. So I was using that as a visual, to educate people, like, this is real, man. This is real stuff. And so when I saw that Grant was doing a presentation on this, I realized I have to go see him. There's something going on here, and he has information that I need to know. So when I met him, I grabbed him just before he went to this presentation. I handed him my CD. He looks down at the CD, looks up at me, and says, "We got to talk." And I'm like, "Yeah, we do." And then his whole presentation was on about all the musicians who had been contacted by extraterrestrials, and the list is endless. I mean, we're talking about like Elvis, Jimi Hendrix, Al Jourgensen from Ministry, all the members of Yes, the Moody Blues, David Bowie, Foo Fighters, Britney Spears, Sammy Hagar, just endless, it's just endless the amount of musicians who have had ET contact. Or were putting it in their music, teaching people about that, and then also then he started talking about music downloads and how musicians seem to get music that just came like in a dream, or one of their greatest hits was just something that came to them in a dream. They didn't even write it, and so they're tapping into this other consciousness of creativity. And I had experienced that myself with one of my songs, and that's how one of my stories ended up in his book, Tuned In: The Paranormal World of Music. So there was all these little pieces that were coming together. It wasn't that I was anybody special. I mean, all these musicians were being contacted by ETs. But also the funny thing is that Grant tried to, find out, relay that kind of same study to, let's say, golfers or football players. And he could not find any correlation between anything of like people playing sports and ET contact. Nothing. It seemed to be, just with musicians. So
Musicians.
the question is like, why? And we think it has to do with something with our consciousness, with our creativity, with getting into the altered state of alpha, so that your brain waves go slower, and then you get into this creative zone and you're tapping into a higher consciousness. That was the key. And the funny thing was, because we're going to talk about this anyway, I work with a group of extraterrestrials. I've been working with them for the last 10 years, known as the Ponti, who are Zetas, Grays. People want to call them Grays. They hate the name Grays. Don't call them that, but they are like that. So they've got black eyes. They're short. They got larger heads, and they have four fingers. And but the Ponti who I work with have taught me many things that I've incorporated into my music, including telepathy, telepathic storytelling, and tonal language of like the cetaceans and the whales, and just tonal language itself, understanding tonal language. But also, what's more important is tapping into that energy, into that creativity, which the Ponti call the edge of the black. So what Grant Cameron was trying to describe with musicians getting into the zone of creativity, the Ponti, they knew about it, but they called it something different. They called it the edge of the black. And what it is they say, go to the edge of the universe where nothingness and everything exists. Turn around and listen for the next song to be played to you so that you become a conduit, co-creator with the collective consciousness, and then you're writing with the universe. So you're tapping into a much higher consciousness with the collective consciousness when you get into this creative state. So that's what that's how the Ponte described what's going on. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I've always thought, they say, well, the universe has to end somewhere. And I've always thought, if it does, there's got to be something on the other side of that veil. Do you see it that way?
I think that's where music is created.
So, right at that end point, huh?
Right at the end point, yeah.
End point
you turn around, you face the entire universe and galaxy, and you're there with everybody, and then you become a conduit. You add your emotional element, you add your creative element, and you play your instrument with as much passion and sing your strings and with all your heart, with all your tears. And that's what it's about.
I need to take a break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm your host, David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Kevin Estrella. He is the one-man band Pyramids on Mars, also the name of his first release, right?
Well, it's the first, that's the name of my first album, and that's the name of my band, yeah.
Yeah. So, your first encounter with the Ponte, am I pronouncing that right, Ponte?
Ponte, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, you were contacted by Sue Walker, the telepath for the Ponte, a few weeks before it happened, and she told you to expect a visit. Tell us about that.
Well, I had been working with the Ponte already for about just under a year, working with Sue Walker, their telepath. And just to understand, Sue Walker, they made contact with Sue in Albuquerque. She is a professional psychic. So she's worked with many of the three-letter agencies for finding missing persons. And she was even featured on television shows as well. So she's the real deal. So the Ponte contacted her, and she's been the voice for them. And she's been, they opened up a Twitter account at the request of Commander Tilcom, and they started doing the Twitter since 2015. Anyway, so the Ponte had gotten to get to know me, and they wanted to visit me for my first time. Sue contacted me and told me, "You'll know that you've been visited if something is out of place." And so about 2 weeks after that announcement, it was one night where I was asleep and, in my apartment. My apartment had very tall ceilings, 14-foot ceilings, and my bedroom was actually a loft above my bed. I actually had to climb a ladder to get into the loft. So from my loft, I can overlook and look down at my room. So somewhere in the middle of the night, around 4 o'clock or something like that, I woke up and I felt like there was a presence in my room. I just felt it. And I looked down. I couldn't see anybody. It was empty. There was nobody there. So I went back to sleep. And then I was awoken to this feeling of warm liquid draining out of my left ear. Just like if I had been, if you had been swimming and you had lots of water in your ears and then water just, leaks out of your ears. Right. That's exactly what it was. It was very warm liquid and it drained out of my ears and it really startled me. And I was like rubbing my ear going, ugh, that's gross. What the hell? And then went back to sleep and, didn't think of it. Get up the next morning, get dressed and go to work. And so, I get home that night and I walk around around my room. And then I happen to notice on the shelf, I have this like wooden statue of this guitar player and he was facing the wall. And I was thinking, why is he facing the wall? Was I drunk last night and I dropped it and put them on the shelf? No, I wasn't drinking last night. What are we talking about? I would never put them around backwards. And I remembered, oh my gosh, I think the Pawnee were here. And so then I contacted my friend, a Colm Wookie. He's the one who, he lives in Australia, and he's the one who introduced me to the Pawnee on Twitter because he's the one who found them. And I told him about the whole story. And he said, oh, that's funny. Drudy was here last night, and she was waiting for me to go to sleep because they were going to do a procedure and to remove black goo. And I was like, a procedure? And I was thinking about it. And then I thought, wait a second. And then I ran up to my bed, and then I noticed on my pillow where my ear was resting was this reddish brown stain. And then I told him about it. And he said, oh, yes, thank you for reminding me. They told me that they would put liquid into us, and then the last part that comes out the left ear, and they're cleaning us out of contaminants. And I'm like, what the heck is you are you talking about? And what happened was, that about like for about 7 days, my ears were sore, but I was also every time I urinated, I was exfoliating all this chemicals and ammonia, and like it was just reeking. It was like, what the heck? My body was exfoliating all this stuff, like metal. Like it smelled like metal and ammonia, and it was just my body was just going crazy. And then by day seven, my brain had completely cleared up. It was like I never realized how much poisons and metals are in our foods that actually contaminate our bodies so badly that our brains are actually fogged up, foggy. And my brain was cleared up. I never felt like that before, except for like maybe when I was like, like a young child, like 4 years old. And I was able to even access part of my brains, like focus on part of my brain in areas, and it was incredible. With the Ponte, where the reason they did that was because they said that my telepathic not my reception, but my projection of my telepathic projection was not good. It was very, very cloudy. So what they were doing was they were cleaning me out so that they could hear me better telepathically. And so then I cut out that piece from my bed, whatever pillowcase, and then I put it into a plastic container. And then about 2 weeks later, I found another stain on my pillow. They redid it again, the procedure. And then after about a week, then my brain really cleared up. And it was then they said, ah, oh, now we can really hear you well. So whatever they did, that was the first visitation. Now I did have more visitations of the Ponte after that. And the
Excuse
one
me. Let me ask this. Interrupt. I'm sorry, but did you
sure.
ever have that chemical on your bedding analyzed?
No, I have not. No, and it's so faded now. I mean, it's probably still there, but the thing is, like, who would I, trust to have it analyzed?
Move
I
on.
mean, I
Move on.
MUFON.
Yeah.
Well, I would probably never get it back, but that's possible. I mean, it's probably contaminated by now because it's so old, but yeah, at least I still have it. I also have some other strange anomalies that have been collected from my bed because the Ponte have picked me up many times, dozens and dozens and dozens of times they picked me up and taken me places, and then I find strange things underneath my bed, like obsidian, like black obsidian sand or just red sand. One time, Sue called me up and said, check your bed sheets, tell me if you see red dust. And when I pulled my bed sheets back, my entire bed was covered in red dust where I laid. My pillow was all red. My bed sheets were all red. I was like, oh my God, where the heck have I been? So I don't know whether, I was taken back to, it was the red sands of New Mexico, or whether they took me to Mars. I have no idea where they've taken me. It was nuts, though. It was crazy.
But do they take you physically, and as opposed
Yes, they have
to
been. Yeah.
spirit out of body? You have out of
I'm sure that they can take me out of body as well, but I know that they've taken me physically many times because I every time Like I always make sure that my bed was always clean before I went to bed, and then in the morning I would find sand, and stuff in the bed. And because I always made sure my feet were clean, so my bed was completely clean all the time. And then in the middle of the night, that's where I find this stuff.
There's
And
nothing.
there's norm.
Go ahead.
What's that? And then there's no sand. I don't carry any sand to my apartment. There's no sand at all anywhere. And
That's what I was getting at. Was there sand
like
outside your
obsidian
apartment?
stuff.
I didn't understand that. What is it?
Like black obsidian. Black obsidian sand sometimes I would find, and then some other things that were more organic. This one thing, it looks almost like a shark tooth, but it's more like a scab. It feels like a scab. I don't know what it is. And then some other things that look like a seed. I found a seed underneath me, and then some other stuff that I can't even describe what it is. I have no idea what this stuff is, but I put it in bags so that it would be protected, so I could have it analyzed at some point. I don't know
Yeah,
what they.
I think you can trust MUFON if, to get it back. I mean, you give it to the Air Force or government in any way, you may not get it back, and they would deny ever receiving it. But you give it to MUFON, you'll get
All right. I'll take your word for
it back. Trust
it.
me, trust me.
Okay, sure. Yeah, are you okay?
I'm a doctor. No, I'm not. I'm a radio announcer. Trust me. How do they generally contact you? During the day, at night, in dreams? What?
I've been contacted a lot in dreams. I've been contacted physically. I've been also, one time I was awake when they came. Other times I remembered, they had a flash of me, allowing me to remember a time with them. Other times have been where like I'm in an alpha theta state, and I'm hearing them and feeling them, standing around me in my bedroom. So there's been many different ways that they've appeared to me. There was like one time where like it's a lot of these like tap a lot of my visitations happen in altered states of being in an alpha theta state. So that's basically where you're not awake, but you're not dreaming. It's right there in the middle. So you're almost like you can be in your astral body and your non-physical body, because I learned how to do that 3 years ago, through the Ponte, how to astral travel. And so then I would be interacting with them in my astral body. And so, there's one of the first visits I remember was in my apartment, and it was in the morning, and I guess it was a female crew who were on their way back home, and they stopped in to see me. And I remember hearing them coming up the ladder, and there was two that were in front of me, and then there was one that, was just lying down behind me. And she put her hand on my shoulder and rested her head against the back of my head. And I just started to cry. It was just an amazing experience to feel, to feel their presence being there with me. I also, one time I was here in my apartment, and I was in the alpha theta state one morning, and I felt a set of about five hands resting on me. So there was, two hands on my left leg, two hands on my right leg, two hands on my left arm, two hands on my right arm, and the person who had their hands on my right arm were kind of flicking their hands back and forth really fast, like almost like a paddle boat touching me. And I remember hearing telepathically somebody at the end of the bed saying, he's not quite asleep. He's still kind of awake." And then I heard somebody was in the corner of my room, and they were, I have a didgeridoo, like those instruments from Australia,
All right.
and I could hear it grinding against the wall, so they were picking up and looking at it. But then at the same time, I could hear them walking around in my bedroom, and they were walking really fast. It was like their feet were moving really, really fast, and it almost sounded like, rain hitting on top of a tin roof. But the thing that I remember the most was that they were sharing with me their feelings, and it was this it was an emotion that they were sharing with me of warmth of your family. That's what it felt like. It's hard to describe emotions, but this was an emotion that communicated to me that you are family. You're one of us. And I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that.
And have you ever had a multiple witness encounter where there have been other people around to see this happen?
Not with the Pawnee, but I have had an incident where Sue Walker and I, we were in Albuquerque, New Mexico, staying at her place. And you also have to understand that not only does she have contact with the Pawnee, but she is a major Sasquatch, experiencer. So, and she draws lots of portraits of not just the Pawnee, but of the Sasquatch. And part of the reason why there's this connection with the Sasquatch is because one of the Pawnee, who's my buddy, his name's Radar, his best friend is a teenage Sasquatch named Kie. And their clan is not too far. They live in the Valles Caldera area of New Mexico. So the Sasquatch started coming to Sue asking for her to draw portraits of them to show the world as they see themselves, as you know, as people and then not as monsters. And so I've had experiences with Sasquatch with Sue Walker. And one of them was we were in the backyard about 3 years ago, and we were doing we had a laptop, and we were doing a couple videos of us doing talks about ET stuff, and there was something heavy that was in the backyard stomping around. We thought it was a very large animal, but we couldn't see it. But it was bipedal, like 2 feet, boom, 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 boom. And we both heard it. It was only 20 feet away from us. And then after we finished our first hour of these videos, we went inside, and Sue's husband, Otter, he is a shaman. So he sees the outer world, he sees the outside world. He has a lot of contact basically. And he said, "The minute you two were out there doing your video, there was 12 Sasquatch that showed up here." So it's like, oh, that's who visited us. So
obviously, Sasquatch, dare I say, slash Bigfoot, are other dimensional beings.
Yeah, they're dimensional and they're physical. They can walk between worlds as easy as walking through a forest and then. Jumping onto a beach full of sand they can do both.
Which answers the question, why don't we ever ever find a carcass of a Bigfoot or Sasquatch?
Because they protect their people. They treat their people well, and they stay hidden, because there's lots of dark forces that want to destroy their people. So They have to be careful.
But they will go back into their own dimension.
Yeah, they're going back to their own dimension. They have places where they live. I think they sometimes can live in caves or outside. They can move between worlds. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that does very answer. Easily. And very often the people claim that during a Sasquatch or Bigfoot sighting, there'll also be a UFO sighting in that same area at that same time. And
yeah, there can be. Yep.
Is there a connection there?
Yeah, because the Sasquatch, they're not technological. They remain, nature. They're nature's preservers, nature's protectors, but they also are friends with a lot of different star nations. And so they do travel with them. We know that, Sasquatch are located in many different parts of different worlds. They are very adaptable because of their thick fur. They can be in warm locations. They can be in cold locations. Mm-hmm. They can't be attacked by insects. They are very adaptable to multiple different types of environments. Mm-hmm. So many of them have, traveled and gone, and live elsewhere in other parts of galaxies. So, yeah, that's what we learned.
So, what is the message they wish to convey to the world through you?
That the Sasquatch
Well,
or the Ponte?
Sasquatch or Ponte, any of these beings.
Well, the biggest one, the reason why the Ponte are here and are so predominant in trying to get people's attention is because they are here to help prepare us for official first contact. So that is the predominant reason. So they've been working on this for, since at least the year 2000, helping to prepare humanity for official first contact. They visit their Twitter followers. They're trying to get their presence known, and because there's a lot of changes that are taking place on the planet, we are in the middle of an extinction level event. So that is precedence. The sun can go micronova anytime now, and that's the reason why the governments and the military have all these deep underground military bases and cities that they've built there, and all these, tunnel systems and railway systems that go all the way across the United States. So they're prepared for when the sun goes micronova, but they're not telling the mass population
Right.
because we're not invited.
We're not
So.
invited. There you go. There you go. I need to take one more break to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, Making Waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, your host, and we're speaking with the musician slash extraterrestrial experiencer, Mr. Kevin Estrella. The Pyramids on Mars, that's the name of the group. Not a group, you're a one-man band, right?
Well, written by me, yes, but I have John on bass, and we still play live, so.
Yeah, very good. So, what other extraterrestrial races have you had visits from? What is the most memorable?
Oh boy, I've had visitations by Sasquatch, by Umo, who are another human race. I've had three mantis encounters. I've had two reptilian encounters and an alpha draconian encounter. And what else I'm trying to think. And then there's other star nations who have showed up who were using telepathic screenings appearing as someone from my memory. I knew that they were not who they were showing because it was like, one showed up and it was, remember that sitcom from the 80s, Alf? Yeah, he showed up as Alf and just sat there on top of my bed and we had a conversation. But I knew that it wasn't Alf. I knew it was some, star nation who was using that, who felt comfortable in that skin to use that. I've
Right.
also had, one show up as Holly Berry, the actress. So I knew it wasn't Holly Berry who was in my bedroom. I wish, but so.
So you, if you're,
Oh.
are you asleep at the time and you realize you're dreaming, or you realize that,
These,
go ahead.
yeah, these happen in these lucid dream states or these alpha theta states. Actually, one of the most memorable for me was actually it was an Arcturian hybrid, by the name of Flaylee. She was probably the most memorable. So I'll tell you about a couple of those about those visits.
Okay.
My first visit was actually even before the Pontee, and it was a reptilian female who I think she was actually Sauroid, which means that she's actually indigenous to Earth. But what happened? I was in my apartment and I was halfway asleep when I heard somebody coming up my ladder, and I heard my duvet being ruffled around, and I opened my eyes and the sound went away, and I was like, wow, that was weird. And so then I'm trying to fall back asleep again. I get into that alpha theta state, and once again, there's my duvet is being ruffled around. There's somebody who's crawling around on my bed. I wake up, and the sound disappears again. It's gone, and I'm thinking, what's going on here? And I realize I think I have a visitor. So this time, I allowed myself to, fall asleep, hear the ruffling going, and then it was like she just kicked me off the fence, and boom, all of a sudden I'm in this lucid dream state. And in this lucid dream state, it was like if I was still awake. I was lying in bed, lying on my right hand side, and I have my eyes open, in this dream, that is. And there was, so I could feel that there was somebody behind me who was like crawling into the bed and just kind of settling in, and seeing if I was comfortable, if I was not going to get frightened by their presence, which I was not. And then next thing I know, they turn around, put their hand on my left shoulder, push me down on the bed, and it's this female reptilian, and then she sits on top of me. So now she's sitting on top of me, and I'm looking at her, and she has like very small green scales on her, on her body and her face, and they're light green in color, but along her neck and along where her ears are, these little bumps for her ears, and along the side of her head was kind of it was greenish blue, the color of the scales. Her head looked like a clove of garlic, so it had like one bulb on the right, one bulb on the left, and one bulb in the center. And her head was a little bit extended. It was bigger than, almost like a Ponty, like a gray. But she had this blue coarse mohawk that came right off the top, and it was kind of hanging down over the left side of my head. And she had amber reptilian eyes, a very, very small snout, and a kind of like a slit for her lips, very dainty. And she was beautiful. She was very attractive. But then she took my right hand, and she's holding my hand. I see her, I look at her hand, and she's got three long fingers and one thumb, and she's got like 1-inch claws, very sharp claws on all her hands. Mm-hmm. And then she she puts she takes my middle finger and she puts it in her mouth and she slides it across her bottom tooth. And it was like razor sharp. And I didn't know how to take that. I didn't know what it meant. And then I end up waking up from that whole incident. And then she was gone. It was an incredible experience. And she's never come back. But I worked with a forensic portrait, and I sent you that portrait. You saw that one, didn't you?
Yeah, you sent me a couple of them.
Yeah. So I worked with a forensic artist, and we created that portrait, and that's exactly what she looked like.
Wow.
So. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Did you have any questions about that?
I was just going to say the one that you say was Arcturian.
Yes.
My sister and I had an encounter when we were kids. And my sister's had visitations all of her life. I just have one that I know of. But yeah. I hypnotized my sister and asked her to get in contact with these beings, and she did. And I asked them to spell out, where are you from? And she spelled out Arcturian, and she didn't know anything about UFOs or
wow, yeah,
And I asked her to describe the beings. Oh, they're little grays. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, when you gave me that picture of the Arcturian, I sent it to her in an email. She said, I saw that thing and I just had to get rid of it right there. And she's afraid of cats.
Just oh.
Cats. And the picture that you sent has cat's eyes, right?
Yeah, she has cat eyes. Yeah, because she's a blend. She's a hybrid between the Arcturian and a Lyran, like cat people.
So, yeah, I thought it was amazing that she spelled out the name of a galaxy that she never even knew existed.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
These little pieces.
I can relate to it.
Huh?
I can relate to that because it happened with me too.
Really?
Of knowing a star nation, never didn't even know they existed, but I knew their name when I saw the picture of them.
Okay. So. Okay. So it's in the mind somewhere, but
But why,
So,
we don't know. Yeah.
and then something happened to trigger that memory, and boom, there you are.
Yeah.
So, did I interrupt you? Were you telling me about the
No, I was gonna tell you about well, how much time do we have? I can probably tell like one more story.
Oh, well, we have 54, 13 minutes, something like that.
13 minutes. Okay, good. I can tell two. Can tell at least two more, or three more stories of
Go ahead.
ET encounters. When Flaylee showed up, that was quite incredible. It was one night where I was trying to get back to sleep, and I was just halfway asleep when I felt this finger running down my left arm, very very gently, and kind of sensually. Just this finger that was just running down my arm. And I felt this female presence in my room. I'm like, there's somebody here. They want me to go to sleep. And so I allowed myself to drift and get into that state. And then I ended up in this lucid dream state. And now it's just like if I was awake. And now I'm looking in my bedroom, and there's somebody crawling under my bed sheets. Like they're hidden, they're crawling under my bed sheets towards me. Now, at this point, I'm conscious of the fact that I'm actually, because now I'm in a sleep state. I'm actually paralyzed. She had paralyzed me, and I was physically choking on the back of my tongue, and I was going,
Wow.
I couldn't breathe, okay, because of the angle that my neck was on. So she released me just enough so that I could tilt my head back, tilt my head back enough so that I wouldn't choke, and then boom, she pulled me back into that lucid dream state again. And I was still paralyzed for this while. She's coming, like I didn't see who it was. Somebody's crawling under the bed, and then they pull the covers back and jumps up in front of me, and it was Flaylee with this huge look on her face, like surprise, it's me. And the way she looks, she looks like very much like a Pontee. So she's got she's got a larger head, which kind of goes back a bit, almost like in the back of her head, almost feels like a football. She had blue skin, just like she looked most very much like the Na'vi from Avatar, almost to a T with the Na'vi, except the Na'vi had hair, so just remove the hair. But her eyes were the same color as the Na'vi, so that amber yellowish. And they were glowing. Her eyes were slightly bioluminescent, just slightly glowing in the dark. It was so freaking cool seeing this.
Was
And
this before Avatar? Did you
yeah,
say?
no, it was, I think it was after Avatar, the first one, after the first movie. I think so. Yeah, it was after, because I remember just I was saying, God, they really
They
They really
nailed that.
knew how to have an effect on whoever wrote Avatar, James Cameron, because those people actually really do exist. And so she jumps up with the and she's there in front of me with this huge smile, but the way she greeted me was kind of like we already knew each other. But so it's like, where did we meet before? People just don't do that. That's not how somebody greets somebody on a first encounter. It
Right.
was so strange. You know what I mean? Like she,
Right.
hiding under the bed sheets and then jumping out saying, "Hi, look at me. You surprised me. Aren't you surprised?" And I say to her, I said, "I'm so glad you found me. Did you feel me calling out to you?" And then she laughed, and then I got this side thought from her, this telepathic side thought. You think all of your initiate, all your interactions or your ET contact is initiated by you? And I was like, huh? I didn't understand what she meant. But the way she looked, she had very soft skin, and her facial features looked very much like Princess Leia from the first Star Wars movie. That's what it kind of reminded me of, because Princess Leia has these soft cheeks, and that's what Flaylee had. She had these soft cheeks. She had these beautiful, beautiful eyes with the cat eyes, and so then we're sitting in front of each other, and then we just start to touch each other with our hands, and so with my right hand, I'm touching the back of her neck, And at the same time that I'm doing this, she's mirroring me, doing exactly the same thing to me. So it's like we're mirroring each other, using our hands, just kind of, exploring each other and touching each other. And so then I move my hand up to the back of her neck, and it kind of feels almost like a brick, like the way her skull felt there. And then I move my hand to the back of her head, and her head went to like a point, almost like a football. Was very interesting. And then I remember touching her arms, and she had very coarse hair on her arms. But her skin was cool to the touch. And so then, yeah, we just had this interaction for a very short period of time. It was amazing to meet her, and she told me that her name was Flaylee, but I think she was using that wasn't her real name. She got that name from actually my favorite childhood book, Watership Down, because that book is about rabbits, and one of the main characters in that book, his name was Flaylee, but his nickname was Bigwig. But I think that's where she got the name Flaylee, and it just really stuck. So I've always called her that. I've also had. I'm trying to think of the other encounter. Oh yeah, the mantis encounter was interesting. I was just like in bed one morning, and I was in that alpha theta state, and then I felt something pressing on the side of me. They were lying next to me on my right hand side, but their body had a very hard exoskeleton. And at some point, how they were resting was pinching my leg, and it was very uncomfortable. But then I heard telepathically in my left ear, I don't know how they do this telepathically, in my left ear, they started whispering into my left ear with this kind of weird, this weird insect kind of sound. And then it was followed by these clicks. And so, I've talked to people who've had mantis encounters, and they describe the clicks exactly like that. So I realized there was a mantis who visited me. I didn't see them. I didn't see them. I just heard them and felt their body pressing against me. So it was pretty wild.
Both the mantis type beings and what else? Oh, the reptilians. How could I forget that? Reptilians both have bad raps, you know?
Yeah, I
People,
know.
is that true? Are they bad entities?
Not at all. Absolutely not. And it frustrates the hell out of me, why there's such this cosmic prejudice. Okay, like people, they say that, the elites who are controlling this planet are reptilian. Well, I cannot confirm that. But I don't know more information about that. But reptilians are an older species, they've been around much longer than us humans, And there are thousands of reptilian species out there amongst galaxies who are much higher evolved than we are, who are very benevolent. So you can't all throw them into the same bus. It's like trying to say that one group of humans represents a whole entire planet. So let's go, take an ISIS, ISIS member. Oh, I guess all humans are like that. No. So like why are reptilians treated so badly? They are very high, spiritually benevolent beings, many of them. So I've had two encounters with reptilians, and I honor their presence. And I have other friends who are very close with reptilians as well. So, I stand up for them, and I always will stand up for them because they need to be treated fairly.
Depends on which one you get. Same way with humans, huh? Depends
You
on which
have to
one you
treat the
get.
individual. You treat the individual, not the race. You want to be treated fairly and respectfully as a human being, then you start treating others the same way that you want to be treated. So keep that in mind.
The golden rule, it's all over the world, all over the galaxy,
That's right. Yeah,
huh?
don't be a co don't have cosmic prejudice because of how a being looks. Oh, he looks evil. He must be evil. No, that's the way their people look. I mean,
we're not casting for a movie here, right?
no, this is how they look. I mean, like, that's what happened, with my experience with an alpha draconian reptilian at a UFO conference. Ryan Stacey from MUFON was doing a presentation. on a case that he was studying in the Burlington area, which is 20 minutes from my place, of a woman and a daughter who had ET encounters. And he had a, you know, he had pictures that he was putting up, and he said, "I asked her to draw a picture of what she saw, and you got to be careful about what you ask, because look what she drew." And then he puts it up, and it's a reptilian, you know, bipedal reptilian with red scales and had wings. And I'd never seen a reptilian like that before, but I knew immediately who it, what it was. I knew that that was an alpha draconian reptilian. Don't know how I knew that, I just knew it. And then he starts comparing it to gargoyles and demons. And I'm thinking, well, my God, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You know, it's like because he looks evil, he must be evil. It's like that's such a cosmic prejudice. And anyway, I'm going to tell the story because this is one of the best ones. And so I wanted to say something, but I didn't. I kept my mouth shut. And he kept doing his presentation and doing all kinds of stuff, coming back and here, forth, and there. And then he came back to the end of his presentation. He put the picture of the alpha draconian back up, and then he was going to, and then he put another picture of a gargoyle. And then I was thinking, okay, I want to say something, but I didn't have the guts. And then there was something that said something to me. Well, if you're not going to say something, then I am. And then all of a sudden, this presence came into my body, and I nearly threw up. It was so powerful. And I threw my hand up in the air and I said, "Excuse me, excuse me, excuse me." And I interrupted his presentation. And then as I'm talking to him, my voice drops down and I'm talking like this. And I couldn't control my voice. My voice just dropped. And then all of a sudden, my body, I felt a change. I felt like my shoulders were like, I feel like the Incredible Hulk. I just went, pfft. And I felt like I was 16 feet tall. And then I felt these heavy things between my shoulder blades. I didn't know what it was, but and then my back felt electrified and just powerful. And then I was speaking with this authority, and it kind of had a military presence to it. It wasn't positive, or sorry, it wasn't angry, it wasn't happy, it was just neutral. And it was an alpha draconian who was channeling through me, and I was speaking with his voice like this. And I was only about 25% there. It was 75% him, but the two of us were speaking together as one. And his message was that this picture here is an alpha draconian, you know, reptilian. And you know, you cannot judge someone based upon their appearances, you know, whether you know, judging them as being good or evil. You have to judge them on the individual. The way you're presenting this is a cosmic prejudice. And I said, "These are my people. There are many of us in the room right now, and we are listening." And then he said, "Okay, my presentation's done. Thanks, guys." And then he dropped his
And he ran
presentation and he
away.
ran off. He
Oh,
ran off, yeah.
my God.
And then Joanne Edie, who ran, was running the whole event. She came onto the podium and said, "Okay, guys, we're going to take a 15-minute break." And she knew me and she turned to me and said, "Kevin, that wasn't you talking."
Kevin Estrada, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but where can our listeners go to
To find me, yeah. The best way is my website is pyramidsonmars.com. That's pyramids on Mars. You can also follow me on Facebook, you know, Kevin Estrella. That's a great way to follow. There's links to my music through my website. That'll take you to Bandcamp where you can listen to all four albums I've put out. I also have my own UFO radio talk show on the Artist First Network. So that's artistfirst.com. And look for Pyramids on Mars. There's 10 years of interviews there. So those are the best places to find me.
Very good. Kevin Estrada, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dave. Much appreciated.
Bye-bye.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage, scroll down to We Are Not Alone, and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archive shows. Or click on the Talk Shows button, then the We Are Not Alone button, for the latest show archives. And please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.